And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this Thursday afternoon, along with co-host Bonnie Berman. Well, the clock is ticking. April 15th is tax deadline. So today we begin with discussion of income tax issues and tell about changes for 2013 returns. Joining us in studio, returning from last year, Adam Kornfield, Senior Tax Manager in the Miami office of BDO. Welcome to you, Adam. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
And joining us by phone from Washington, D.C. is Keith Hall. He's the tax advisor of the National Association of the Self-Employed. Welcome to you, Keith Hall. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So, as Joe said, we're almost down to the wire here. It's Monday, but let's look at some issues relating to 2012 to begin with. Adam, what are the benefits of filing electronically, and are there increased dangers such as identity theft in doing so?
Sure. There's definitely some positives as well as negatives to filing electronically. From a positive perspective, the refunds can be deposited quicker into your bank account as opposed to filing via paper. Some negatives that can be detected with filing electronically is now identity theft can be detected a little quicker than prior to with paper filing.
Oh, so that's an advantage then.
It is an advantage. It is an advantage of filing electronically, so they can detect your identity theft. However, at the same time, it should be looked at that to make sure that the identity theft is happening to you. So, yes.
Okay.
Keith Hall, tell us what self-employed and micro-employers can expect in the tax year 2013.
Well, the interesting thing is we can always expect some changes, that's for sure. There's always going to be negotiations and arguments, if you will, about what deductions are going to remain, which ones are going to be changed. So there's always going to be updates. We like to talk to our members and to small businesses all across the country. And maybe the most important thing that you need to do is stay connected. Stay connected to your local accountant, like Adam's firm. Stay connected via the internet for our organization. We have a nice website at nase.org. The IRS has a great website, of course. That's like getting the information straight from the horse's mouth, if you will, at irs.gov. But for example, maybe the biggest thing small business owners need to keep in mind for 2013 is that 2% increase in payroll tax. You probably heard a lot about that for the negotiations of the fiscal cliff, everybody arm wrestling over that 2%. And although all of us really, in effect, have to swallow that extra 2% in taxes, for that small business owner, there's no employer, there's no boss out there to do the withholding for them. You must remember to adjust your quarterly estimated tax payments for that 2% increase, or next year, when it's time to file that tax return, you're going to find yourself a little bit short in the amount of tax you should have paid in.
Keith, would you say your website again, please?
It's nase.org.
Which stands for National Association for the Self-Employed.
Exactly.
What are some of the most overlooked money-saving deductions you can take as a small business owner or self-employed?
Well, I think there's three that I see a lot, and it kind of makes me sad. I certainly don't want people to pay any more tax than they absolutely have to. Maybe the one that I see the most is forgetting about the business use of your car. I think maybe that comes up so much because all of us use our car at some level for business. That deduction doesn't show up in your business checkbook. So if you don't remember to keep track of your business miles, it's a very valuable deduction that you can miss. A second one that happens a lot, particularly for the smaller businesses, those businesses that operate out of their home, there is a deduction available for the use of that back bedroom. It's called the home office deduction. There are certainly some people who don't take that deduction because it's too complicated, or perhaps they've heard down at the library that if you take that deduction, you have a higher chance of being audited. I hate that concept of actually paying the IRS by foregoing a deduction for the fear of some question coming up later. Rather than look at it that way, just pay attention to the forms. Again, stay connected to some of those resources we talked about. Lots of help out there to get the deduction correct. And at the end of the year, you probably can save $1,000 or so just by recognizing the benefit of that home office deduction.
And,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask you the third one.
The third one is probably the one that most people do forget, and that is the options that they have to contribute to their own future. And I'm talking about making contributions to a traditional IRA, or from a standpoint of a small business owner, considering a contribution to a simplified employee pension plan or an SEP plan. The small business owner can contribute up to 20% of the net earnings from their business into a retirement plan and take a deduction for that contribution on last year's tax return. It's like the last real chance you have to save money before you save that tax return. And it really works out the same as if Congress and the IRS are like matching your savings plan. Because if you put the money in for your own future, they'll reduce your taxes. And it's like putting the money where their mouth is, if you know what I mean. But a lot of people don't think about that. Nobody sends them a reminder notice. Nobody calls them and say, hey, don't forget to invest in your own future. So if you don't remember to consider those options, it's a deduction that a lot of people miss.
We're talking about tax issues on today's Topical Currents with Adam Korenfield and Keith Hall. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, now's your chance. We have experts. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And email, that's radio@WLRN.org. Adam Korenfield, how about changes in inheritance rules and also any medical deduction changes?
Sure. First of all, with medical deductions, it's considered an itemized deduction, and there are certain thresholds that you have to exceed to actually take any benefit. And just for your own edification, for 2013, there was a new law change, and actually the threshold has increased. So now the threshold was 7.5% of your income that had to be exceeded to get any benefit. They've actually increased that to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, for senior citizens over 65, the threshold of 7.5% remains in effect for 2013. But it's one of those, it is an itemized deduction that should be looked at. If you are close to that, exceeding that threshold, really talk to your accountant, because there are a lot of medical expenses that you might not be aware of that you can take. And by talking with them, you can see if you can actually benefit from those expenses.
So maybe if you have some dental work that needs to be done, do it near the end of the year so that it can be included as part of the threshold.
Without question, some things, copays, prescriptions, contact lenses. There's a lot of different medical expenses that are not talked about, that people are unaware of, that are allowed. And by claiming them, you might exceed that threshold. Even actually mileage, as Keith was talking about, is deductible for medical expenses. So
mileage,
track your
too.
Mileage to the doctors, the dentist office. All of that will add up and maybe hopefully let you exceed that threshold to claim a benefit.
What's the rate per mile?
The rate per mile is right now 23 cents per mile. However, going back and forth to the doctor, it can definitely add up. Mm-hmm. So definitely kind of track the mileage. It's another additional expense that you can claim.
What about non-cash donations or donations of time and services? Are those deductible?
Sure. Definitely to start with non-cash donations. When you contribute to Salvation Army, to the Goodwill, or any other great organizations out there that are actually of non-cash, please make sure to keep a receipt. And then it's an itemized deduction that's included as a charitable contribution on your tax return. If it is over $5,000, the value, an appraisal will be needed. However, below $5,000, a receipt should be adequate.
Okay.
And speaking of receipts, make sure you have adequate documentation of all of your receipts.
And what about time and services for those who donate time and services? Is that
sure.
a deduction?
Sure. Unfortunately, your time as pro bono services are not deductible as a charitable contribution. So pro bono services are not deductible, unfortunately, the value of your time.
And what about deductions that can raise red flags? Keith was saying that a lot of people don't take that home office deduction because they're afraid they might be audited. What are other kinds of deductions that will raise red flags for the IRS?
No, sure. Keith brought up a great point, the home office deduction. There are various accountants who have different opinions on on the audit of the red flag of the home office deduction. But like I said, with the proper documentation and meeting the requirements, the deduction should be taken and you should not be scared. Other red flags could be unreimbursed business expenses if you're claiming too much. But at the end of the day, as long as you have the proper documentation and support, there's no particular red flags that you should be concerned on.
So you have to keep meticulous records.
I would recommend it, because the chance of getting audited is going to happen years down the line, 1 or 2 years down the line. So to keep the records meticulously now will save you a headache in a couple years from now.
And how many years do we have to hold on to these records? I've heard 5, 7.
Yeah.
How many is it?
We normally encourage clients from 5 to 7 years to hold on to it. I usually do 5 to 7 years.
We're speaking with Adam Kornfield. He's a senior tax manager at BDO Miami, USA, and Keith Hall, national tax advisor of the National Association for the Self-Employed. On today's Topical Currents, need to take a short break. We'll come back, take some calls, and continue.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. And we're joined by experts Adam Kornfield and Keith Hall. Gentlemen, both of you can maybe address this. Tell us what can be deducted as business expenses. Looking over some of the material, I see that cat food for a junkyard owner's rat control would be a business deduction. And also, get this, an exotic dancer's implants. Keith?
Oh, I appreciate that question. That's a good lead-in, and it'd be easier for me to talk about the cat food.
But I think you were thinking about the other.
No comment. I think the primary goal here is certainly to deduct as much as you possibly can to save the money that you're working so hard to earn. I would way rather a small business owner keep that money, invest it in their business, create a new job, rather than send the money to the IRS. Certainly, we all want to pay our fair share. But the key concept for a deductible business expense is if that primary purpose, the main reason for spending that money, is indeed a business expense. That's really the only main criteria that has to be met. So think about those type of things. If you indeed have that cat to maintain the control of the warehouse, the environment, certainly that is a business expense. And that kind of makes some intuitive sense. Other example, same process. If the point of those expenses is indeed to promote the business, has a primary business purpose, those are things that should be expensed. A great planning idea to kind of put this in a thought process to kind of crystallize the concept is consider a meal expense. Now, when you go eat lunch, you're at the office, you're working all day, that seems to be business related. But if you're by yourself, if you don't have another individual with you to provide some support for a business purpose, the meal is not going to be deductible. But try to think in terms of finding someone to go to lunch with. If you can go to lunch with a client, or a potential client. And in my business, and I think in many small business owners, there are only two types of people in the world. There are clients and there are potential clients. So find someone to go to lunch with. Even if you don't choose to actually pay for their lunch, now your expense, the payment for that meal, primary purpose is business. Now it becomes deductible. So try to think in terms of those expenses before you spend them, rather than on April the 10th when you're trying to figure out what you can deduct looking backwards. Think in terms of the front end of that expense. Try to make it business, and that's a good way to increase your deductible expenses.
So you can take Harvey to lunch and sit down with Harvey and say, hey, Harvey, how's business? And Harvey says, oh, it's okay, and then you can go on and have your conversation, but that still constitutes a business lunch?
Absolutely true. And keep in mind, though, that the reason this works, the reason the IRS wants us to have a deduction for that meal is because it is promoting business. So now for the real good fact here is if you can change the way you look at those lunches and start going to lunch with a potential client, you never know where your next best customer is going to come from. So even way better than getting a deduction for the $15 you paid for the meal, way better if you just develop a new relationship that's going to create new income for your small business.
Adam Korenfield, your thoughts?
Definitely. To kind of piggyback off Keith's statements, what he said a little earlier is one overlooked item is the vehicle expense. It's actually not something recorded, but you're actually incurring mileage to business meetings. So kind of keep track, a written log of all those miles, or you can actually take the actual expenses incurred on a car. And any expenses incurred in your type of business to generate income would be deductible. So make sure you keep all your receipts and then speak with your accountant or your advisor and then see if they're deductible. There's no harm in asking the question, is this deductible or not?
Speaking of the tax preparer, if you don't have a simple tax return and you need to get a tax preparer, what's the best way of going about choosing one? And is there a lot of fraud afoot in tax preparation?
Sure. There's definitely a lot of services out there. There's many capable firms, many capable sole proprietors that can help you with your filing. Also, there's other services such as VITA, which are tax services that prepare free tax returns for various individuals that meet certain limits. But what I've seen has become rampant, unfortunately, is identity theft. And when we've been filing some electronic returns, the extensions, we've received notice that this extension cannot be accepted because it's been already electronically filed by another taxpayer social security number using the same identification number. If this happens, there's definitely a lot of phone numbers to call, as well as using the taxpayer advocate to kind of handle this identity theft. But we've been seeing it a lot more. And if identity theft does happen, make sure to contact your credit bureaus to make sure that there's been no effect to your credit.
And I see. So if you have had your identity stolen,
sure,
you have to...
Definitely. If you have had your identity theft, unfortunately, stolen, there's different avenues that you can proceed. I would first contact the IRS Identity Theft Victim Hotline, and they will provide you with the information that they need to kind of start the process, as well as contacting your credit bureaus to make sure that everything seems correct on your report.
What about filing extensions? Does that make you more likely to be audited?
Yeah, that's actually a big misnomer. Filing an extension is not going to lead to an audit. An extension is just an extension to file. It's not an extension to pay the tax. So as long as you pay in the adequate tax by 415, you should be fine and no penalties would incur. But by filing an extension, there is no means an additional audit will pursue or ensue.
Keith Hall, more information for the self-employed and also micro-employers.
The concept of finding someone to help with return, as Adam was talking about, that can be very concerning. It seems like a lot of people, small business owners and individuals, find somebody and they just don't want to have to deal with it. They just turn their stuff over. They don't ask questions. They don't think about it. They don't ask, hey, when is my return going to be done? Am I going to be the last one on your list? Am I going to be the first one? So what we try to encourage individuals and small business owners is try to find someone through a referral. If you can find someone that is trusted by someone you already trust, so one of your friends, even your clients, ask your client who does their tax return or their financial statements. If you can find somebody, again, from a personal referral, I think you'll be way ahead of the game. And then regardless of who you use, ask those questions, just like Adam talked about. Ask about fees. Ask about timing. If I do have questions, can I call you directly? How long will it be before you return my call? All of those things are all indicators of the service that particular individual or that particular firm can supply to you. And then the last thing is find somebody that kind of fits with your personality, that maybe has experience in your particular industry. If you're a real estate agent, there's certain things that your business has that are unique factors. If you're a construction worker, you have your own construction company, totally different concept for tax planning and for financial statement preparation than for another type of industry. So ask about industry expertise. Ask about those fees. And don't hesitate to talk to a number of different people to find that person that kind of fits with your overall working personality.
We have an emailer, Michael and Teresa. It's understood that pro bono time may not be deducted. However, are mileage and miscellaneous expenses deductible for pro bono projects?
No, they go hand in hand. Unfortunately, since the contribution is not deductible, the pro bono mileage that is incurred is not deductible as well for charitable contributions.
So you're doing it out of the goodness of your heart there. What about, I read that not all audits are created equal. What are the different types of audits and which are the most serious?
Sure, there's definitely different types of audits out there. And first of all, there's definitely, by receiving correspondence from the IRS, it is not the end of the world. I would not be scared when you receive correspondence. It's basically their system generates a lot of unfortunate, unnecessary correspondence because things may have not matched from your tax return. So just kind of talk with your advisor to kind of see how you can handle it best. But from an IRS perspective, there's a lot of matching going on. So if your W-2s, your 1099s do not match what the IRS has on record, an audit could ensue, or actually a notice could ensue. There's different types of audits, as you mentioned, but at the end of the day, all they will be asking for in an audit is documentation to support the position that you took on your tax return or any deduction that you claimed.
Keith Hall, tell us more about the National Association of the Self-Employed. Is it a membership organization?
We are a membership organization. We represent about 150,000 self-employed business owners. A vast majority of our members have less than five employees. We have members in all 50 states. We were organized in 1981, and again, we only subsist on our member dues. We don't have any PAC money or any special interest money. Our sole goal in representing small businesses, both at the state level and in Washington, D.C., is just to make sure those self-employed business owners have a level playing field. I'm not sure if you guys knew or not, there's over 1.6 million self-employed business owners in the state of Florida alone. Those small business owners, whether you lean to the left or lean to the right or you're right down the middle, everyone talks about job creation, about new jobs being the answer to any economic questions that we might have. 70% of all new jobs come from small business owners. And that is tremendous. And that's what we want to do. We want to help those small businesses answer one more question, create one more job, get one more customer. And ultimately, that's what generates the economic growth that this country is famous for.
And that website again?
www.nase.org.
Okay.
Well, we certainly want to thank you. It's been a very interesting segment, Bonnie.
Yes, and good luck getting your taxes done by Monday.
We want to thank Adam Corenfield, Senior Tax Manager in the Miami office of BDO, and also Keith Hall, who joined us from Washington. He's the Tax Advisor of the National Association of the Self-Employed. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And Food and Dining up next. And we're back, Thursday edition. Today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Well, Thursday's food and dining segments have finally arrived. We're joined by my friend, chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. So Linda, what used to be known as the United Way Food and Wine Festival has been renamed and even expanded. We're going to learn more about that today.
You gave away my secret.
Oh.
Well, hello, Joe. Hello, Bonnie.
I'm famous
hey, Linda.
For that.
Well, if you like wine and food, South Florida is a wine and food mecca. There's so many food and wine festivals. It's just a big party here. Veritage Miami starts April 17th, and it goes on for the weekend. And you may be wondering what Veritage Miami is. If you didn't listen to Joe, you might know. We have some news for you. And here to give us that news is Royal Caribbean Cruises Chairman and CEO, Richard Fain. And he says his title is, I have to get this straight, his Royal Corkscrew of Veritage Miami. Welcome, Richard Fain.
Linda, thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you with us. And also with us is Wynwood Kitchen Bar and Kitchen and Bar Chef, and that's Miguel Aguilar. Yes, I said it?
That is correct. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. He's going to be participating in the opening event. It's the craft beer tasting, and he's filled our studio with food. Mm-hmm. So we're very happy that he's here.
He looks like a proficient chef, doesn't he?
What does a proficient chef look like?
I hope so.
He just has that look.
I hope so.
Right.
Of competence.
Well, for sure he is, because his food's delicious. So there you are. Well, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions for his Royal Corkscrew or anyone else? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. And do we have email today?
We do, radio@WLRN.org.
Okay, and joining us by Skype, as he does every week, is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. You can read Fred Tasker's column in today's Miami Herald. He also writes the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column in today's Herald. So, Tasker, what are we drinking?
Tasker, suddenly, huh?
Well, hey, Gassenheimer. we're drinking Alsatian wines. That should go well with some of this delicious food.
All right, you're missing out on this food here.
I know.
Yes, right. All right, well, let's go to Richard Fain. Okay, Richard Fain, what is Veritage?
Well, thank you. You know, it's interesting. The United Way Wine and Food Festival has been around for quite a while, and over the years has raised over $12 million. But this year, we thought we would take it to a whole new level. It's been successful. It's four nights of amazing parties of different types. But we wanted actually to take it even further so that we could involve more people in the activity and we could raise more money, because in the end, that's really what the objective is.
But Veritage? Where'd that come from?
Well, you know, the United Way Wine and Food Festival was just such a mouthful, and it really didn't convey all that was going on, and it sounded, frankly, boring. And so we wanted to do something that conveyed that this was something unique, uniquely Miami, and something that we could own. And Veritage is a good combination. It sounds, reminds you a little bit of wine, reminds you a little bit of truth, but it's actually a made-up name. But at the end of next week, everybody's going to be thinking of that as not a hard name to remember, but something that's quite exciting.
But here's another name, his Royal Corkscrew. What is that?
But of course. You know, originally I was asked to take the chair of this event, and it seemed to me that was as boring as the name of the event itself. And so I thought I would take a clue out of the Mikado and just make up names. They sound wonderful. They, of course, have absolutely no meaning, and the Royal Corkscrew seemed appropriate. So everybody has a title. All the titles sound very exalted. None of them mean anything whatsoever.
What are some of the other ones?
Well, we have the Dom of Funship. We have the knight of the fourth, the dean of the fourth, the queen of the fourth knight. We have the Royal Imbiber. So we have a whole series of names.
So who's the Royal Imbiber?
Oh, that's the job I want.
Well, that sounds great. Okay, so you've changed the events this year, and we have a new event. That's the Wednesday night event?
Well, we have a couple of changes, and it's kept evolving, but this year I think we've taken it to a whole new step. So the Wednesday night event will be at Wynwood Walls, and it's going to be a beer bash, and it's going to have street performers. I think we're expecting about 1,000 people to take over that whole area. The restaurants will be providing noshes for people to enjoy. And it's just a very typical Miami night. If your typical night involves street performers and wines and, a 100 different craft beer, et cetera.
Okay, well, talking about that, we have a chef right here who is the chef at Wynwood Kitchen and Bar. So, Chef Miguel, tell me, obviously you're going to be part of it, and you've brought us food. What are you going to be serving?
Well, we're going to be serving what we brought you today, which is the skirt skewers that are topped off with a little chimichurri.
That's skirt steak. It's juicy and wonderful. And what's the sauce? The chimichurri sauce?
It's chimichurri, which is a mixture of garlic, some herbs, a little bay leaf, and a little bit of vinegar and olive oil just to bounce out.
Now, that's on a stick, so you can just walk around with the stick in one hand and don't forget the beer in the other.
One hand for the food, one hand for the beer. You got to keep a nice balance.
Steak on a stick. That sounds great.
Aside from the skirt skewer, we're also going to be serving our number one seller at the restaurant, which is the chicken ropa vieja empanada. And it's a stew of chicken thighs.
Wait, say that slowly. Chicken ropa vieja. So that's not the usual ropa vieja. It's chicken.
No, it's chicken, correct. And it's just the word of ropa vieja means shredded old clothes. And basically it's that. It's a shredded chicken thigh that we stew with red and yellow pepper, some Spanish onion, and then a chipotle chicken stock reduction sauce.
That it's not too spicy.
I'm in for that.
It's not too spicy. And what's this red thing I had in the middle of it?
That's the sauce. Which
is the pepper? Was there a red pepper on it?
There was red pepper and yellow pepper in there as well.
Oh. And then the sauce is made with cilantro.
The cilantro crema, which is sour cream, cilantro, and some lime juice for a little acidity.
So tell me something, Wynwood Walls, both Richard and you have been talking about. What is Wynwood Walls? Richard or Chef?
Well, I think it's one of the up-and-coming areas of Miami. It's one of the things there you see is it's covered in graffiti. It's an area, really, I think, for the young people to express themselves. And we have, I think, a total of 28 different restaurants that are providing food and the 100 craft beers. So it's going to be quite an event for the evening.
And there's no wine at this one. It's just the food and beer.
But in case you're desperate, the next night has wine, and the next night at Merrick Park will have wines and also noshes.
Right, and books. There's going to be books selling there, and
we're honored to have you, Linda, and others to sign your books. And Books and Books are organizing all of that, so it's a great opportunity. So that's more of the wine aficionados who can enjoy themselves.
But then there's really a special event going on. I think it's the last night, and this is at an airport hangar. And wait a minute, I have a name here. I have a name. Jane Abbas is in charge of this event. And she's the queen of cork? Did you make up these names, Richard Fain?
Well, I think we all got together. We sampled what we were going to be all tasting, the wine and the beer, and we came up with some, I thought, very imaginative names. Jane previously had the boring name of the chairperson of the United Way, but Jane and Leonard have graciously volunteered their hangar, a 1942 restored hangar, at the Opa-locka Airport. And that's going to be the site of the Saturday night event. And it's going to be an amazing time.
Well, I understand because they've restored it. It's a vintage from, World War II?
Exactly.
Obviously, it must be. And so there's going to be some vintage planes there, some vintage cars. And I want to see you do this, Richard, swing dancing.
I'll follow you with that, Linda. But the hangar itself is quite spectacular because it is original and it's been restored, but it restored to its original look, and it's a magnificent place. And where better to have vintage planes, cars? Many people will come in vintage outfits. I'd love to see you in the kind of narrow dress they wore at that time.
Very nice, Richard.
Hey,
His Royal Corkscrew. So tell me something. That's what, Saturday night?
That's Saturday night.
And then Friday night's another event.
Friday night is also one of the great successes of the program for many years, and that is an interactive dinner. Where Chef Ballou is going to lead all of us, and one person from
this is Daniel Ballou from J.W. Marriott, isn't it? Yes, right.
J.W. Marriott Marquis, and he's actually going to be the guest chef who's going to lead everybody, and one person from each table, supported by a student from Johnson & Wales, is actually going to cook the dinner.
Wow, that sounds great.
It's always been amazingly successful. People love it.
I think there's a whole range of prices here, so there's something for everyone. I think the Beer Fest is about, $55 a person for all
$55.
For all the beer and wine, all the beer and food.
All the beer and food. Yeah, all you can eat.
Up in the design district, yes?
Yeah, and it's actually in the art district, the which art is district. Windward.
What's the website where you can get tickets and stuff?
Veritage Miami. V-E-R, let's see if I can spell this. V-E-R-I-T-A-G-E, yes?
Yes, it sounds French, but it's easy to spell. It's just like it sounds.
.com.
Okay.
Or else they can call the United Way if they can't remember that. But Richard would like them to remember Veritage Miami. Okay, so Richard, I can't help but ask you this question because we've known each other for quite a long time. And your wife gave me this information. And she said, you're in charge of a food and wine event, but your idea of a gourmet meal is to put cheese on your hamburger?
Clearly, after 43 years, Colleen and I have been married too long. She knows me too well. But I don't have to like it. I think the food, the important thing is that the people who come will like it. It is gourmet food. And the other important thing is we've got to remember this is for the neediest in our community. And we are raising the level of savings tremendously. It's raised $12 million so far.
Fantastic.
This will be great.
Right. Well, we're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking with Royal Caribbean Cruise Line's Richard Fain, or as he's now called, his Royal Corkscrew, and Wynwood Kitchen and Bar's Chef Miguel Aguilar. Yes, I said it right. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. And we're talking about Veritage Miami, the United Way Food and Wine Festival, with Royal Caribbean Cruise Line Chairman and CEO Richard Fain, better known as his Royal Corkscrew Head of Veritage. And I'm
if
saying,
if you'd like to kiss my ring, I have it here available for you.
Kindness, thank you. And Wynwood Kitchen and Bar Chef Miguel Aguilar, they've been telling us about the exciting events coming up April 17th through the 20th. For more information or if you want to buy tickets, you can go to veritagemiami.com or you can call the United Way. But for those times when we're not going to festivals, which seem to be happening a lot here, food and wine festivals, it's dinner in minutes time. So today's dinner is very simple. It's a horseradish encrusted chicken with garlic, sweet potatoes, and snap peas. And I'm drooling as I'm talking
garlic,
about it.
Garlic, sweet potatoes, yeah.
I knew you'd like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's so simple. I mix some horseradish with some mayonnaise, and that gives a lot of zip to these boneless, skinless chicken thighs. The chicken's coated with the mixture, and then I roll the chicken in some panko breadcrumbs. And I like to use the panko crumbs because those are very crunchy. They're toasted before they're used, and you can even get whole wheat ones now. And you can find them in the supermarket. So you just mix it up with the mayonnaise and the horseradish. You roll the chicken in it. You roll the chicken in the breadcrumbs. And then you saute it for about 5 minutes per side. 165, 170.
Sauteed in olive oil? Or?
No, it just saute it in a nonstick pan. Because you've got
the
mayonnaise.
It has the mayonnaise.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe a teaspoon of olive oil, okay?
Or maybe a little butter.
For you, anything, Joe. Okay. Good. Now, next, when that's done, while that's cooking, you can take some sweet potatoes and sugar snap peas, or you could use any green vegetable you wanted, broccoli, green beans. And I peel the potatoes and cut them about the same size as the sugar snap peas, put them in a bowl, a little garlic, and a little bit of olive oil. Okay, Joe? Yes? All right, then I microwave it for just a few minutes. And that's so easy. You've only got one pan to clean, and that recipe is in today's Miami Herald. But if you want another chicken recipe that has sweet potatoes in it, I have a barbecued Korean chicken with sweet potato salad at dinnerinminutes.com.
So even a klutz like me could make that meal in 15 minutes?
I'll give you 25, Joe.
Okay.
All right. First of all, you have to go to the kitchen and turn on the light. That's a major effort here for you. Anyway, and please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. And Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, I got a question here. What have you ever tried a wine from Alsace? You write about this in my column in the Miami Herald today. So please take a look because I think these wines are very much worth trying.
So that's Alsace as in Alsace-Lorraine?
Yeah, yes. It's the area, it's in France, actually. It's on France's northern border with Germany. And the two countries have fought over this area for decades, so even centuries, and they've both taken turns running it. So because of that, the wines reflect the culture of both countries. These are mostly white wines, but they have German names like Riesling and Gewürztraminer, but they're made in the French style.
So they're kind of French-German wines?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's a combination.
For example, Riesling is often slightly sweet and relatively low in alcohol. It could be even 11% or even less. In Alsace, it's more often bone dry in the French style with a full 12% alcohol. And this is because of history and culture and I guess mainly because the weather in Alsace is a little warmer than it is in Germany. Now, in Alsace, restaurants serve Riesling with the region's most characteristic dish, which is charcuterie, which is sauerkraut with sausages and other kinds of pork. So this ought to be right up Joe's alley. Mm-hmm. Don't know how you feel about sauerkraut.
Joe, how do you feel about it?
I'm not a big sauerkraut fan, really.
But the
sausage. Just eat the pork, then, shall
okay.
You should like the pork.
There we go.
And one time I brought a bottle of dry Alsatian Gewürztraminer to a Cuban pig roast, and it was the hit of the party. Wonderful combination.
Are these wines easy to get? I mean, where would
any,
you get
them? Oh, any ABC, Crown, any of the big stores will have them, sure.
Okay.
And another really nice white wine from Alsace is one called Cramant d'Alsace Sparkling Wine. This is actually made in the same method they use for France's famous champagnes.
I knew you'd
use different grapes.
Well, has there been a week without champagne here?
There, not for a long time,
okay.
And there isn't going to be.
Okay. What are we doing with champagne?
But they use local grapes, including Pinot Blanc, Auxerrois, Pinot Gris, and Riesling.
What
and
was
it,
that
it
word?
It comes out nice
Auxerrois. What is that?
That is a white grape from Alsace. It's spelled Auxerrois.
Wow.
Usual spelling.
The usual spelling?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Usual spelling, yeah. And the final nice thing about these wines is that they're not super expensive. Most are $20 or less. So give them a try and maybe you'll thank me.
There you go. All right. So let's get back to Veritage, and we have Chef here. Now, you're going to have beer, and Fred, as we've been talking about, we've been tasting this wonderful chicken ropa vieja empanadas.
That sounds fabulous.
In a cilantro sauce, dripping delicious. And then we have this skirt steak, which is just perfectly cooked. And I want to tell everybody, Chef came to the station with all this food on a motorcycle. And he made it,
so
and the food made it.
What kind of craft beer are you drinking with that?
We're going to have a lot of local breweries, especially one that's opening up in the near future. It's called Wynwood Brewing Company. Miami Brewing Company is also going to be there. And Brown Distributor is going to be bringing most of these local breweries and different types of beers. You know, we're going to have all from different stouts, pilsners, and pale ales.
You know, that's good to hear because for a long time, Miami was kind of behind the times in craft beers. It sounds like they're catching up now.
Yeah, I wonder at the beginning, because a lot of the craft breweries couldn't make it in Miami for a while, and it seems like they're doing better now.
Yeah, it seems like the trend's starting to catch up. I've been in Miami for 2 years from Philadelphia, and up north it's a very big thing going on. And it's been probably for the past 5 years or so.
But do you sell a lot of beer as opposed to wine at Wynwood Kitchen and
yeah,
Bar?
Yeah, at Wynwood Kitchen and Bar, we probably have one of the biggest selections of craft beers in Miami.
Wow.
Yeah, I think across the country, people are getting sick of wimpy light beer and they're turning to craft beers that actually have some flavor.
Well, so what would you pair with your empanadas and your steak? I mean, one's a chicken and one's a steak, and what do you do with that?
I mean, for the chicken, I would go with a lighter beer, something more in the essence of a pilsner. And then for the steak, I would go with a stout, something that has a little more body, so it blends in better.
Mm-hmm. And how would you, I mean, we know, well, we hear Fred Tasker talking all the time about this cherries and chocolates and everything else in the wine. And
oh, you can find anything you want in wine these days. You can get Godiva chocolate in beers. You can get Godiva chocolate in your stout if you want it.
Is that right? The real chocolate? I mean, should I run out to get that, or is it just going to taste like chocolate?
I always meant to call him up and ask him, how do you get chocolate into beer? Hmm. I do not understand that.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. It's been really a very tasty week. Richard Fain, his Royal Corkscrew, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us, and I look forward to welcoming you all to the 4 days of festivities.
Next week, they're coming up. The festival is April 17th through 20th. For more information, you can go to veritagemiami.com or you can call the United Way. Now, Chef Miguel Aguilera, I got it right?
Yes.
Okay.
As in Christine.
That's Aguilera.
Okay. Wynwood Kitchen and Bar, thank you for joining us and for the very, very delicious food.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And good luck Wednesday night.
It's going to be a ball.
Right. Bonnie Berman and Joe Cooper, you ate well today.
It's been fun today.
Thanks, Linda.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Hey, good luck with the festival.
Next week, we'll be talking with Mary Carmen Martinez. She's going to help us make our kitchens more eco-friendly for Earth Day. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that wraps us up today. Topical Currents is produced by Richard Ives. Directed by Caroline Brader-Watts, Paul Leary is online producer. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat, another one of his patented in-studio concerts. Monday, we return with author Joan Mellon about her book, The Great Game in Cuba, How the CIA Sabotaged Its Own Plot to Unseat Fidel Castro. What were the agency's real motives? Free audio archives of this and past programs at our website, WLRN.org. Also, more information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. And the calendar on this day in 1906, 107 years ago, Albert Einstein introduces his theory of relativity. Basically, the faster one travels in space, the slower one travels in time, and nothing can exceed the speed of light, I think. And on this day in 1933, 80 years ago, Dorothy Parker ends her self-described reign of terror and steps down as drama critic of The New Yorker. And one more before we say the buck stops here. On this day in 1951, 62 years ago, President Harry Truman relieved General Douglas MacArthur from his command in Korea. MacArthur wanted to nuke communist China. Old soldiers never die. So we leave with a thought from Dorothy Parker, of course a member of the famous Algonquin Roundtable. Quote, "A good thing for them to cut on my tombstone. Wherever she went, including here, it was against her better judgment." Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making public radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.